Hey everybody, Adam Shartoff here, your host of FilmWax Radio. It's Monday, March 11th, 2019. This is episode 542. Lest you forget, FilmWax Radio supports independent film. There's no doubt that we're bringing on famous directors and actors, but not at the expense of the emerging filmmaker, or the emerging actor, or the emerging artist, or whomever. I have not lost sight of that. So, you know, it's a constant tension. You want to have people that will certainly be recognizable and have long careers. And then you also want to bring on people that are creating new energy in this industry and who are creating, you know, essentially the future of what this industry will look like. And so that's my commitment. So while I will bring on Sundance filmmakers, I will also bring on small festival filmmakers or programmers as well. While South by Southwest is going on right now, which is a festival I usually, you know, attend, I cannot be there this year. You know, willingly, I made the choice not to go because I have commitments here in New York City. However, there are festivals that are closer to home. And over the course of the next 6 months, we're going to go to plenty of other festivals, so not to worry, and we will be podcasting from them. I will say, however, FilmWax Radio will be covering this South by Southwest, regardless of my not attending. And as of right now, as I am recording this introduction to episode 542, my cohort, my colleague, my confidant, Ronald Wallman, is in Austin, Texas, and will be sending dispatches from South by Southwest 2019. We'll have some friends of the podcast, old and new, to put on, probably on our YouTube channel as my guest. Go there, by the way, because I've begun to populate the YouTube channel with content that's not even on the podcast. So not only does every segment of every episode go up on that YouTube channel, but there's actually content that is not on the podcast, as I guess I'm just repeating myself now. But I mention this because, for instance, this weekend, as of Friday evening, March the 8th, Khaliq Ala's new film, Black Mother, premiered theatrically at the Metrograph Cinema in Manhattan. And because of the timing was so last minute, I sat with him just minutes before he had to do a Q&A right at the theater. So we sat in the Metrograph offices and we knocked out a podcast interview. But because of that timing, the quickest, most expeditious thing for me to do was to put the conversation, the recording, on our YouTube channel. So go to YouTube and search FilmWax or FilmWax Radio, and you can listen to that there. We will, of course, I think later this week, put up the Khaliq Ala conversation on the podcast as well. Also up there is I've been having a number of long conversations with film historian and author Joseph McBride. We had a very, very long conversation a few weeks ago when I was in Los Angeles, and then we had a follow-up just the other night regards to his new book about Ernest Lubitsch, and as well as John Ford, which he wrote a book about some years ago. And we talked about Wells and Capra, all these filmmakers, because he's written about or spoken about them. But we're going to promote Joseph McBride's new book. It's called How Did Lubitsch Do It?, which was published by Columbia University Press and is currently available. So if you go to the FilmWax YouTube channel right now, you can hear the part about Lubitsch. But we will be posting in the coming weeks more of the conversations, again, which include those other great directors, as well as Steven Spielberg, Howard Hawks. We talk about a lot of different things, and he's great. He's also written about John F. Kennedy's assassination. It's another major topic of his, but we're not really talking about that very much at all. But we do talk about these other master filmmakers and anybody who loves to hear a real expert talk about those filmmakers, you'll want to tune into those episodes when I post them. In the meantime, episode 542 is going to be a pleasure to present to you. There's two segments. One is two programmers of this festival. I guess they call it a series. It's the Caribbean Film Series. What they do is every, I think, few months they do an evening where they present a film from a Caribbean filmmaker and make an evening of it. They've been doing this now 5 years, so on this anniversary, they are having a long weekend, I guess. It's called the Caribbean Film Series, a fifth anniversary festival. From March 14th through the 17th, 2019, you can go to the BAM website or Caribbean Film Academy website and get tickets and more information about the various films and shorts and et cetera. Now, I did mention Kalik a lot. An interview that I put up on YouTube is he has a new film at the Metrograph. Well, it's also going to be screened at the Caribbean Film Series on the evening of the 17th. So if you can't get over to the Metrograph in time, you'll have the option of seeing it also at the Caribbean Film Series. So we're going to have on two of the programmers who put that series together, who have been working on this and who founded this series. And their names are Romola Lucas and our friend Curtis John, who has been on this podcast before. And he's returning so in just a few moments. So we'll play that and they'll talk about that. And then we're going to bring on the documentary filmmaker named Jason Charnick. I saw his film, his documentary, very personal documentary called Getting Over. I saw it at South by last year, 2018, and it's now going to have a screening here in New York City. We're going to talk about that, of course, in a little while. You won't want to miss it. We met up in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago, and he came out to where I was staying, and I will be moderating the Q&A with Jason at that screening, which I'll talk about in the intro to that segment just after this first segment. So if you are free on, I think it is on March 21st, come meet Jason and come meet me. I'll talk more about it in a few minutes after this first segment, again at the AMC Times Square, at the AMC 25 Times Square. I'm not sure. We'll have all that settled in the introduction of the next segment, but let's get to first the Caribbean Film Series programmers, Chris John and Romola Lucas, here on FilmWax Radio. Glad to meet you. Curtis, you've been on this show before. You're on episode 372. For those who want to get
third,
to know
Curtis. Third time.
Third?
Yeah, man. This is number three.
Wait a minute.
I did.
I did one. No, you were not on it.
I did one with the
Leiser Brothers.
The second, the Leiser Brothers. Yeah.
Wait, there was one time before that?
There was a time before that I was on. Wasn't it?
I'm gonna challenge you on that.
Okay. Well, challenge me.
Maybe that was my last podcast. Anyway, regardless whether it's twice or three times, it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
And it's great to have Romola Lucas on for the first time.
Thank you. It's great to be on.
Oh, it's great to have you. You guys are, is it fair to say you co-programmed the Caribbean Film Festival?
Yes.
Is that your...
It's fair to say, yes.
And it's the fifth edition?
Yeah, it's the Caribbean Film Series.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm the Caribbean Film Series. And it's going to be here at BAM as of the 14th of March through the 17th, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
What's been the past circumstances with the festival? Curtis, how long have you been with the festival?
Well, it's actually been more of a... So this
or
is
series.
Actually,
excuse me.
Well, here's the thing. It's this. So this is the anniversary of the series. And so for the fifth anniversary, we're actually having a festival to celebrate being 5 years here at BAM.
So typically what goes on? How does this year, other than being the fifth one, how does it differ from the past ones?
Well, usually we're quarterly. And we'll have one film and one short that we show.
Oh, okay.
And then, but this year, obviously with the festival, with the anniversary festival, it's a lot different. So we have a great number of films, many more films over 4 days that we're doing as opposed to just the one.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so did you found the series? You both? You did? Ramola?
Well, together we did.
Together, okay.
Yes.
So you both did?
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind. Anyway, so I'm glad that you're both, and then I'm thrilled that you're both here. And we'll talk about the series and the festival. This is the fifth anniversary. Again, March 14th through the 17th, right here at BAM in downtown Brooklyn.
Yes, yes.
Tucked away behind the beautiful Apple Store and Whole Foods.
Or tucked aside.
And just a block or two from the beautiful Barclays Center. What's happening to this area? Okay. It's another podcast. You want to give the details, and then we can go get in a little bit into the nitty-gritty, some of the screenings.
Okay, so I don't think that I know actually the number of films that we're screening, but it's somewhere in the vicinity of
23.
23. Is that shorts and festivals?
Including shorts? Yeah.
Okay, shorts and features.
That's robust.
We have about 9 features. Mm-hmm. And the rest are shorts. So we have some blocks where we're screening a short in front of a feature. Mm-hmm. And then we have a shorts block.
Right.
So we basically, in approaching the programming for this festival, we sort of focused on the current films that are out. Mm-hmm. And we have one block that is dedicated to a retrospective, which we are really excited about because we get to show the films on 60mm.
Is this the Victor Jara?
Victor Jara Collective Hara, films.
Victor Jara Collective. When you say it's a collective, by the way, and I just to take a baby step back, this is on March 17th at 1:30 in the afternoon. It's obviously a political series. This is a, right? Victor Jara was a poet, a playwright, a musician, of course, and an activist.
Mm-hmm. Most important.
Which was, of course, his undoing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But are these films that he had a hand in, or these were made about him and his legacy?
Actually, neither.
Really?
These films were made in Guyana.
Okay.
And they were made by a group of filmmakers who met here in the U.S.
Oh.
Back in the 50s.
Really?
Yes. And so one of the members of the collective is Dr. Rupert Rupnarain, who is Guyanese. And the other members of the collective are from the U.S., mm-hmm. And they traveled down to Guyana and shot these films. One film, The Terror and the Time, is about the riots that happened in Guyana around the time that we got independence. Mm-hmm. And I'm from Guyana. So is Curtis, actually. And the second film, In the Sky is Wild Noise, that is a documentary, like a posthumous documentary, mm-hmm. about Walter Rodney. That was put together after he was assassinated in the early 80s in Guyana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Who was also a dissident, speaking up for the people's rights down in Guyana. And but the Victor Jara Collective was inspired. That's why they took the name. They were inspired
by
Victor Jara. And so they were just so taken with his struggle for political freedom that they took that name for their collective.
Yeah, that was back in the 70s. Correct, when he was killed? Or is it maybe late 60s even?
It was, I can't remember. Yeah, I want to say the early 70s, but I could be wrong about that. But it's around that time period, late 60s, early 70s.
Right, during the Pinochet regime.
Yeah, I believe it was that 72, 73 year where during that time.
Anyway, that collection of films will take place, that retrospective, will take place on March 17th. Mm-hmm. At 1:30.
Yes. At 1:30.
And is it meant to be seen as a whole, or people can get tickets, see them?
No, it's meant to be seen as a whole.
Okay.
It's black and white. And like I said, it's on 60mm, so you're kind of excited about that.
Yeah, it's going to look great.
Yeah.
What a great place, BAM, where they can show pretty much anything in any format.
Yeah.
You know, that's the great thing of this, working with such an institution, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's that flexibility.
I mean, I imagine they need a heads up about, like, when you're programming it, right? You're in constant touch with a point of contact here, so like they know what you're bringing over.
Oh yeah, yeah. And we had to work that out too, because we had to get the prints from the filmmaker to here, and The thing is, these prints have not been used in 20 years. So the last the films were screened using the film was 20 years ago.
Okay.
And so we had to do a little bit of testing to make sure that it would stand up to, you know, being used for this. And it did, so. It'd
be projected successfully, right? Yeah. So that's happening. The opening night film, though, let's go back and talk about that. That's kind of a big deal. Very popular and a celebrity-directed film. This is a movie called Yardi.
When I was a boy, my brother would always ask me which way you're going to go. Will you go with the righteous or will you go with the damned? This is a story about the path I chose. Kingston, Jamaica. King Fox control the streets. He tell me to forget about my brother.
Redemption. Deliver the goods to Rico. When it is done, you let me know.
Yes, I'm in London.
London.
Mama Roy. All I had to do was deliver the coke to Rico. But I never like him.
First time in London, true?
Yeah, man, first time.
Trust me, go love it, dude.
Four years I haven't seen you.
My name is D.
D for Daddy.
D for Dennis.
I'm gonna come here for change. That's 7 o'clock on March 14th.
Yes, that's directed by the much beloved Idris Elba, it's based on a novel by Victor Headley that was pretty successful in the past decade, so it was just took to really being adapted really well, and we're very excited about it. We're having a lot of people who were definitely buying tickets very early for it, which is always good when you're doing programming for a festival or any type of series.
That's why I guess programmers usually put it the. Something that people can, you know,
accessible film.
Well, some way into it.
Yeah,
you know, whether it's somebody they know, they recognize in the movie, or who's made it, or something else that you know, it's important.
Yeah.
I think for most festivals, not even very well big established national size ones.
Oh yeah, no, there's always that opening night film.
Yeah,
that excites the audience.
And the closing night.
Yeah, and closing night, obviously. Yeah, absolutely.
So they don't dribble out over the course of your festival, coming back right to the bloody end.
Sure, but this film itself is very special. It takes place in Jamaica, but also in London as well. The majority actually takes place in London. And a big thing about our series and festival is that we don't only focus on films made in the Caribbean, but films about the Caribbean diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
So it's and which is pretty far reaching, but people don't always know that. I mean, I think they may know that the diaspora extends to London, but they might not know that it extends to Canada, obviously to here in the States, and to countless other places, to the continent, to Africa. So that's the other exciting part about
parts of Europe, really, maybe.
So, oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, Europe? Throughout Europe, yeah, absolutely.
You know, maybe Scandinavia.
I'm sure.
We all know how much
could be that hidden gem. That we
know how much West Indian people love the frigid climate, Curtis. So it would only make sense that they would.
Oh man,
not just go to warmer Canada.
Yeah.
anyhow. Oh, so that's exciting. I have not heard much about Yardi to date, but I'm looking for... I really do want to see that one.
Well, this is the New York premiere, by the way, so...
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And is it a thriller of sorts? Is there that side of it? It looks like, from the description, it looks intense. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's not
a
comedy.
I mean, it is... No, it's not a comedy at all. I'll put it under dramatic thriller.
Okay, dramatic thriller.
Because there's a bit of a murder mystery. Not even a bit. There is a murder mystery in the film that... You know, we experience, and you know, it's about, in a lot of ways, vengeance and the emotional rendering that takes on a young person, that quest for that. So there's definitely all those elements involved.
Who's the main actor in that?
Emile Adine.
Okay.
You might have seen in Sense8, the Netflix show. He was in the first season of that as one of the starring characters.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just... Very great actor who's doing a lot of good things. I've heard about his work specifically in London. My cousin, who does a lot of artistic work in London, knows him as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's also very connected to the community where that film was actually shot. He grew up around that area too. So so it's going to be great to have him here just to talk about all of those things, to talk about his acting and to talk about the film and to talk about even some of the activism he kind of does himself. Mm-hmm. You know? So, yeah.
Does Elba come out from behind the camera in the movie? Or is he just directed?
You have to wait and you have to watch the movie and
see. Okay, there's a cliffhanger right there for you.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, and I mean, you can talk about other films and events, but I definitely want to mention on the 17th at 6:30, there'll be a very special screening of Kalikala's second feature called Mother, which I saw at New Directors New Films, I think. And he is actually coming on the show next week.
Okay.
Very cool. For his second time.
Right.
Nice.
And this is one of the films that we...
Not third, Curtis.
yeah, so this is one
we'll
of the films.
We'll fix that. Don't worry. You come back on. Sorry, Ramola. Go ahead.
Yeah, no worries. This is one of the films that we're actually excited about. It's it's beautifully shot. It's a documentary, but you can't really tell that, you know.
Yeah.
And just his approach to the storytelling.
Right.
It would be great to screen it to, you know, what we hope would be a mostly Caribbean audience, get their reaction to the film.
Right. This challenges audiences, I'm going to say.
It definitely does. Do,
right.
Yeah.
But then you have the best conversations afterwards. And it's
exactly.
It takes a long time for those films to sort of, I don't know, but, evaporate from your psyche or something. How to say it best, but they stay with you a long time. I don't know. I mean, I call it works of nonfiction because I think of documentaries in... Yes, those are films of nonfiction, but they're only a category of films of nonfiction.
Oh, that's
you know,
because
a documentary I think of as telling us a type of story in a particular way.
Right.
And this is like not that. This is something else, right?
It's definitely something else, yes.
It has leanings in experimentalism, but I don't want to also categorize it to scare off those who maybe aren't used to experimental. This is a movie that will capture your heart and imagination. As I said, it will stay with you, and so
it will. The other film that is also, I think, really good is Cocote.
Cocote?
Yeah, by Nelson Carlo de los Santos Aria.
That just rolled off your lips so beautifully, Mola. I'm just very impressed with that.
So that film is shot in the DR, and it is similar in my mind. It's an almost experimental documentary type film, but it has one of my favorite scenes ever in a film. I don't even know how to describe it.
Maybe you don't.
I don't.
Maybe we go see it, and then we come back and we ask Romolo if we can, or try to see if we can identify the scene that captured her.
Yeah, definitely. And I've seen this film now 3 times, and I'm going to see it for a fourth time.
You are
at this festival. That's
okay. Will the filmmaker be in attendance?
Unfortunately,
it's hard,
he was
right?
not able to attend. We weren't able to get him to come, but
it
would have been great because the Q&A that would come after this film with him would be very enlightening as well.
Yeah. Just call him on the phone. Optimal.
We might try something, but in other instances when we screen films and the filmmaker is not present, but people want to deconstruct it afterwards, we just vibe. Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Just vibe. So if it comes to that, we'll do it.
Oh, good. Okay. Right. Mm. Understood. And Romola, just because we haven't met before, what is your path to the Caribbean Film Festival?
Well, I started an organization called the Caribbean Film Academy with a friend of mine, Justin. Mm-hmm. And we started in 2012, screening Caribbean films in a storefront on Fulton Street. There used to be a store there before
all the development here?
Yes,
when you could afford to do something like that.
Right. There was a little store on Fulton called Nicholas Brooklyn. It was a variety store. They would just pull their stuff off they would pull their merchandise into the back, set up a screen and a projector for us, and we would show films once a month. And we did that for 4 years. We showed films there, and then they had to move because of the construction.
All the rezoning and the reconstruction. Right. Of course.
So they had to move. And so we then started screening in other spaces. But
that's how you'd meet Curtis John, because the Luminal Theater.
We're still a bit nomadic right now.
That's fine.
Yeah, it is.
That can be a kind of part of its charm and benefit, is that It's in different venues.
It definitely is right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah. Curtis and I met and mm-hmm. We talked about, you know, wanting to be able to have Caribbean films on the screen here. And then we made that happen.
You did.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's great to have you both. And again, I'm going to remind everyone, for tickets, go to the BAM website and BAM Films pages. There's a pages dedicated to the Caribbean Film Festival as well. Caribbean Film Series as well, as you can go to caribbeanfilmseries.nyc.
Yes.
See how I did that?
Nice.
And purchase tickets, which are quickly running out. Is you already sold out?
It's not sold out yet, but I would not wait until the day of to try to get a ticket.
Right.
No.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Get them now. Was there anything else? I don't want to leave out anything that's important.
Well, the shorts block is fantastic. Uh-huh. I think every single film in that shorts block, you know, showcases filmmakers like who are going to be successful in their careers if this is what they continue doing.
Sounds like an order.
Yeah, don't disappoint
Romola.
I'm not. The films we put together there are really good. Mm-hmm. And then we have the world premiere of two films, and a Brooklyn premiere of a film by a Brooklyn filmmaker.
Oh, great.
So that film is called Panorama Jamming to the Top, and it's about the carnival culture in Brooklyn.
Okay.
So we're.
Who is that filmmaker's name? Do you have that?
The filmmaker's name is Christine Shaw.
Okay. Shaw?
Shaw.
Okay.
Yes. And she's a graduate of Brooklyn College. So it's a really, local film. So we really love that.
That is great. And that also means people will show up.
Right.
I mean, excuse me, all the more.
All the more, yes.
Because all the friends and family are nearby, or could be.
Right. And then preceding that film is a film called Lifted, which is going to be having its world premiere, which was shot in Trinidad. Mm-hmm. And it's really the first film that has come out since the civil unrest, you know, started to escalate in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Venezuelans have migrated to Trinidad. Mm-hmm. And so this film sort of explores, you know, the interactions of these newly arrived Venezuelans with Trinidadian culture, living in Trinidad and with the carnival culture in Trinidad. And that film was, you know, funded by UNESCO, and it's having its world premiere at the festival.
Oh, great.
Yes. And then there's another film called She Paradise. It's a short that's having its world premiere at the festival. That was just recently shot in Trinidad, and it's a story about female dancers who back up the soca singers.
The what?
The soca singers.
What are those?
Yeah.
the singers soca music performers, they always have very rhythmic dancers in the background.
What are you not telling me?
It's carnival music.
Yeah. So you know, are they dressed?
No.
Is that what's going on?
Well, no.
Oh, okay.
I thought we were going. It's just there hasn't been a film that has actually explored that culture. So
right.
This one starts to do that.
Okay. Very good. Okay. So last reminder, the Caribbean Film Series will take place here at BAM Cinema, or at BAM, in downtown Brooklyn, March 14th through the 17th, 2019. And tickets are available, so still for most everything at this date and time. So don't hesitate to check it out and purchase tickets right away. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Romola. Thank you, Curtis.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. Over 5 years in the making, Getting Over is the passion project of a lifetime from filmmaker Jason Charnick. Given a box of videotapes by his uncle that chronicled his father's final days, it took him well over a decade to even face the image of his father again. In 1997, Jason Charnock's father and lifelong heroin addict, Ray Charnock, recorded 17 hours of video interviews with his brother, noted New York City artist Arnie Charnock. The topics covered his entire life from his childhood growing up in the Bronx up until just a few months before his death. When Jason finally felt ready to watch these tapes, what he saw would redefine many of the childhood memories he held so dear. It would also take him on an unexpected emotional journey, not only back home to New York, but into the past as well. So here we go. This is my conversation. Now, Jason Charnock will be screening Getting Over, which I caught up with at South by Southwest last year, along with TUG, the organization TUG, which helps filmmakers crowdsource a screening. Jason will be indeed showing Getting Over at the AMC Empire 25 in Times Square on March 21st. It's the 7:30 screening. Go to the AMC website, at the Empire 25 website, or you can go to the Getting Over website and purchase a ticket, because he needs a minimum number in order to actually go ahead and do this thing. So we're really getting behind. That's why I'm posting this episode over a week ahead, so we can give Jason all the advantage he can get to get all of his old New York friends and family and fans to come out and support him. It's a very moving and powerful documentary, no holds barred. I saw it and I was very moved. And like I said, I was staying in Calabasas near LA a couple of weeks ago. And I was out with my kid and we were on vacation, and he drove all the way there to do this podcast interview. That's how much it meant to him to come on FilmWax Radio, and I appreciate that. I now consider him somewhat of a friend. I look forward to moderating the Q&A on the 21st, so I will be there after the film to meet everybody and to have a great conversation about Jason's film, which deals with addiction and incarceration and mental illness. If you are dealing with that in your life, you'll want to come to this screening. I urge you to do so. Thank you very much. Here's my conversation with the documentary filmmaker Jason Charnock here on FilmWax Radio.
This is a photograph of Joe Charnock in his uniform in early 1942 for his short stay in the Army. I'm Arnie Charnock, one of his two sons. His other son's name is Ray Charnock. I'm 50 and Ray is 46. It's 1997.
So all the elements have fallen into place to get Ray to tell his story of 30 years on the streets, the penitentiaries, shooting galleries, through a short-lived marriage, produce a kid.
That's Ray in 1975. That's me, his son, Jason. I didn't see my father a lot when I was a kid. In fact, I could probably count on both hands the number of times I saw him during my life.
Jason, this is Arnie. Good luck, good health. Your father loves you and he's sorry he can't be here.
And there was a reason why. You see, my father was a lifelong heroin addict, and in 1997, dying of AIDS, my uncle recorded the last time I would ever see my father alive.
We're bringing in your son.
Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, baby.
How are you doing?
Oh, man.
I took the left Beverly Hills and took the 10 to the 405 to the 101.
The 101.
And then in, yeah. While listening to the Californians.
101. Yeah. WFM 101 on your radio dial.
Coming in hot.
How are you, Jason?
I'm doing well.
We may as well just start.
Sure.
You're having a, is it TUG?
TUG, yes.
It's a TUG. TUG produced screening on the 21st of March?
Correct. Thursday, March 21st.
At the AMC Empire?
25? Empire 25.
Come on, man. That was pretty good.
42nd Street.
All done right in here.
Yeah.
I've been to that a bunch, and they do, meaning AMC, for their larger theaters, they do have a few smaller rooms, which they hold over
right.
for programs like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they have other indie programs, at
great.
Least one other indie program, where they do screen a low budge type of film,
right?
in other words, not a studio-made film.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you can't fault them for that. That's a good thing.
Yeah, no, it's a great thing. I mean, they're a huge
theater chain. They're making money off that.
And yeah, I mean, and dealing with Tug has been great.
You know, it's a great organization. So we're doing this because, first of all, I saw your film, Getting Over, which is about your dad. I saw this documentary you made about a year ago or more, mm-hmm. actually, at this stage. And
yeah, we premiered on March, yes, almost the year 51 weeks ago, March 11th of 2018.
At South by Southwest.
Yeah, at South by Southwest.
And I think I saw it at home, but I was at South by when...
You know what? And I actually think I remember that too, because they were, I mean, I was getting, before, you know, the festival started, we were getting inundated with services and products and people that just, you know, want to get, you know, get involved with the movies, I suppose. And one of them was like, do you want to allow your movie to stream online, you know, for the week that you're at the festival?
Oh, right.
You know, free of charge, you know, for other people that can't make the screenings. And I was like, it doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Is that for the library?
It was
for,
because they would say Stage 21.
Okay, I don't know. What
something like that. It was some service, like Shift something. Shift okay. 21, Shift 71.
Okay. Yeah. They have, when you, I don't know if they still have this, they must. Where, when you used to go to South By, they had in the convention center where, you know,
right, all the madness the hub. Happens.
Yeah, they would have. They had it like in one of their mezzanine, you know, mm-hmm. rooms. They had a library, so you can go in and watch.
Oh wow!
Discs. Like I don't think they do that anymore. I'm not sure, but
yeah, I don't. I don't remember either.
But they also have an online library.
Yeah,
it's mostly shorts. There's a handful of features. Most of the
it was
put
like
up
an,
there. I think it's
like
almost
an opt-in thing, and I was like, yeah. I just want as many people as possible to see it.
Yeah,
and I think you might have been the only one that actually watched it online because I think they give you a report afterwards.
Oh, okay. I don't know what drew me into it. Mm-hmm. I do like personal docs a lot, so that may have been it. And I'm like, who is this guy? So afterwards, I was really touched.
People
by
are still saying that.
Yeah, right. So they say that about me too. You're in good company. I will do on occasion if it's a move, if it has in fact touched my heart, and yours certainly did.
I appreciate that.
Getting Over again, it's director here, Jason Charnock. That I will see. Well, who is this guy and where is he and what? So I think I looked you up on Facebook and then I sent you a message or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
We had chatted briefly.
That sounds like my MO. So, but I was saying that just to finish this thing about the AMC, because this is the important part.
Oh, right.
That you and Tug are hosting a screening there on March 21st, first day of spring, actually. And we need how many people to buy tickets?
We still
in
need
order
exactly
to make sure
100 people. So our threshold, and that's the thing. Like I was, when I was working with the Tug people and we were trying to pick theaters, I could have picked one that was outside of the city a little bit and it would have been a lesser, per ticket charge and a smaller threshold.
Yeah.
But I'm trying, you know, I want, like I said, as many people as possible to see
it. It's easier to get 100 people.
And that's right in the heart of the city.
Right.
You know, and I still have friends from elementary school and high school who have bought tickets already and they live
beautiful.
All around the
and
city.
And they should be your ambassadors for
they've been sharing and stuff and I
post
about it.
Do you provide language to them?
No.
You should do that.
Well, I mean, I make a promo and I like share it and I say, hey, share the thing.
But do you have an email list, obviously, because you must have done a fundraiser.
Yes. Okay. I'm gonna send out, I got a MailChimp update I'm going to send out when I get home tonight, actually.
Okay. So the best thing you can do, and I'm talking to you because I deal with tons of filmmakers, but the best thing you can do is to, and I'm saying this also to the listeners, if you're a filmmaker out there, this is for you too, though, is to, did you do a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe or an Indiegogo?
We had a Kickstarter and an Indiegogo.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Because you don't discriminate. So.
And the next one
what you do is you get those lists, of course. Well, first of all, they're already, you can go right back to those Kickstarter account, your account.
Exactly.
And reach all those people.
Exactly.
But in those emails, as well as your MailChimp list, and you may, of course, have redundancies, but no harm there.
Yeah.
Provide the tweets and the Facebook language and give it to them with the hashtags, with the addresses, with everything.
That's a great idea.
Don't make them work because they can copy and paste it. And the opportunity for them to do it is probably, you know, X number more likely than if they have to make it up the language themselves.
Yeah, so and I had made a little promo video that I had shared to people and said, hey, this is the one I think I tagged, the one I tagged you in.
Right,
you know, send this one out because I made, you know, just like a little, I call it a TV spot. It's never going to be on TV. But.
So normally I would spend a lot more time at the right now talking about the film, and we are going to, but but I want you to finish this, you know, promoting because 100 people in a month is doable.
Yeah.
So
it sounds like a lot, but you know, we've, you know, most people for anything will wait to the last minute anyway. And I've had so many people, you know, promise me that they'll get tickets. And I know some of them will probably fall.
So night of, if you have like 95 people, they'll cancel it.
That if we only, well, if we got that close and listen, if we get to like,
you'll
if,
buy the rest and give them out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Sort of like people do with the Kickstarter. I didn't say that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't want to, you know, and one of the great things about Tug is we don't have to put any of our own money into it.
Right.
You know, it's, in other words, the last thing I want to do is, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what we did before South By in Long Beach. We had a friends and family screening and we four-walled the Arc Theater in Long Beach.
Right.
Yeah, and it was just a small thing, you know. But,
and it's an intimate thing. You want to do something special. And
but even just the cost of renting the theater was like 1/10 of the budget of the picture. So, you know, and you know, I'm not rich by any means. So, like, just the fact that Tug is handling all that,
you know, is
great.
I'm looking out the window of my hotel. We're in Calabasas, California, my hotel. And I'm looking at it.
You can see Bieber's house right from here.
Does he live here?
In Bieber.
Oh,
yeah, the Biebs.
I know Drake lives here.
But
I'm looking out the window. I'm seeing your driver. Where's all this money coming from, Jason?
Yeah, what money? What money?
How do people find... What's your website, your Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff?
Sure.
So let's just get that all out.
Well, yeah, we keep it very simple. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, /gettingoverfilm.
Mm-hmm.
The official website is gettingoverfilm.com.
Right.
And tickets to the Tug screening, you can go to bit.ly for the shortener, /gettingovernyc.
Okay. So the idea is that this is a as personal. You can't get more personal than this, really, can you? I mean,
I mean, I've seen some other, you know, as I was making the movie, a lot of people told me that our picture was similar to other personal docs that they've seen. And it's totally an aside other than I just saw it last night. But the film Dear Zachary, we were compared to.
And oh, yeah.
That boy, that's a super personal movie.
Yeah, that's an intense you know? One. That's
so,
intense.
But the movie is, yeah, so ours is, I know that's a 10-year-old picture,
that's
but
a
I literally
touchstone.
Just saw it.
It's a touchstone.
It sure
but you
is.
Didn't see it till last night.
So yeah, so it's a brand new movie to me, too.
Right. So
but
it, well,
we're in
ever,
that vein.
These
yeah.
stories are evergreen because yeah. there's addiction and is not going away.
Right.
We're not committed to it.
And you know what? I certainly don't want to go down a whole road on politics or anything, but, you know, just that they're, you know, dealing with the opioid crisis and I don't see anything actually getting done. Or if they are, whatever's happened, like nobody's really, you know, it's still there, but I don't know. It's people keep it at an arm's length. They don't, it's not a comfortable topic, you know. That's yeah. one of the reasons why I wanted to make the picture is like,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not anybody special. You know, I'm just like everybody else. And we all know, I used to say it's like cancer. Everybody knows someone with cancer. Everybody knows somebody that's got, you know, some form of addiction, whether it's like an extra belt after work or, you know, a line of cocaine before they go out to the party or whatever. Everybody's got some type of something. And that's really why I wanted to make the picture is to, you know, kind of open that topic up to people a little
right.
more.
Let me start telling the listeners about the film, and you can interrupt because I'll probably get points wrong. Or, you know, I'll leave things out. You were estranged from your drug addict father. That's a terrible thing to say, but your father
it's
was
true, though.
Your dad
it's
100%
true.
Your dad is more than just a drug addict, but he was the victim of his own addiction.
Absolutely.
Heroin was his main drug, correct?
Correct, yes.
Mom?
My mother, I don't want to really give anything away if you haven't seen the picture yet,
okay.
but apparently my mom had some problems as well.
Right.
But after she got pregnant with me, she
cleaned up. Okay. So he disappeared from your life pretty early on.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
He was out of the picture. You, however, maintained a relationship with his brother, your uncle Arnie. And your uncle Arnie is an artist.
Yes.
And he knew that his brother was dying. Should I say this part?
Oh, no, that's fine.
Is this part also in the trailer?
Yeah, it's not a spoiler. Yes.
Okay. So your dad contracted AIDS, which is, you know, from sharing needles probably.
Yes, exactly.
And he contracted AIDS and your uncle ended up
in those final years, videotaping himself talking to Dad Ray.
Yeah. A few months before he died.
A few months. Okay.
They, you know.
This was in the late 90s?
This was in 1997. Yeah, mid-1997. So all the, just about all the footage, the old footage that's in the film is from May of 1997 over the right. course of so a couple of weeks.
It's a found footage film in yeah. a way. Which, or, you know, there's a number of wonderful documentaries where the filmmaker, in this case you, have used existing footage from someone else's project. Right. One of my favorite documentaries ever called Trouble the War. I don't know if you've had a chance to see Tia Lesson and Carl Diehl's film. It's about Katrina, where they met. They went down there to shoot a film. They ended up meeting this woman who's lost her family and house and everything. But she was taking footage from a stolen, I believe it was a stolen. She didn't steal it, but she got a stolen video camera, and it was shooting right out her window, and you know, from the she survived, obviously, and she gave them the footage, and they put it in, and they, you know, it's one of the I saw it at New Directors like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out too.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I say this because it's in that way you also took your Uncle Arnie's footage and decided to make a film. You also did have an opportunity to reconnect with your dad during that period, correct?
Yeah, I got a chance to see him a few weeks before he died in the hospital. My uncle had called me up. He was in the middle of making these tapes and said, do you want to come down and see him and we'll film it? And he never had any intent on making a movie himself about it. He just knew that my dad was dying and he wanted to get something down.
Yeah. And what? Where were you already a filmmaker?
No,
you were just graduating college, right?
It's so funny because my dad, being a lifelong criminal, you know, to steal things to get money to buy drugs and stuff.
Right.
I always wanted to be a lawyer. Up until my junior year of college, I was on a track to be a lawyer because the criminal justice system really interested me at the time. But yeah, I had always wanted to be a lawyer. I had my first LSAT book when I was 12. And I don't know if it had anything particularly to do with my father being in the criminal justice system, but it was just a super interest of mine.
Yeah.
And then my junior year of college, I took a class on the film industry. I mean, that's the name of the class. And when I sat, it was a summer class, so it was an intensive, 2-month long class that was like a full semester.
Sure.
And my professor, not to get on too far of a tangent, but my professor, the first day, he was like, don't think this is going to be a cakewalk just because it's movies and just because, you know, your homework is to read Variety. You know, the average on the first test is a 60. So if you fail the first test, don't worry about it.
We get rid of the lowest grade.
And then I took the test and I got 100.
What?
Like a perfect 100. And it was about film history and Thomas Ince and the whole studio system getting started, along with Variety terms and, you know, cume and things per screen and all of
that. I don't even know what
and
you're talking about.
Yeah, I got 100. And I was like, maybe I want to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't like, you know.
But you could have applied that to the law. And
I could, yeah, but at that point.
And
I had taken a couple of law classes, a couple of pre-law classes. And one of my pre-law classes, my homework assignment was to go to, I went to Boston University, and one of my homework assignments was to go to the Suffolk County Courthouse in Boston and just watch proceedings for the day. And that was the first time I'd ever really watched, other than Law and Order, you know, that was the first time I had actually seen it in action.
Right.
And it's boring.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't want to do so this much. Anymore.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So you also had you wanted to also have something that was very stimulating.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess that's most people. You know, but a lot of people go into the law, I wonder if they really think about that 90% of the time. It's very dull work.
Yeah, I grew up, you know, obviously, you know, my dad was in prison and stuff, and I had gone to visit him in jail. But my only real, exposure to the criminal justice system and the courts was on television.
Right.
You know, and that's...
Sure. And they don't show the dull stuff
much. Then that's television. I saw how boring and dull it was, I was like... I'm out.
Well, since you brought it up, and we're also talking, you know, this is one of those cases where you're not only the filmmaker, but you're the storyteller, but you're also part of the story. So you're also a subject in the story. So this is which I really appreciate. I like that. But you got to tell me where what you want to talk about and not talk about. But it all relates to the film. So I asked, you brought up visiting your dad in prison when you were young. I wonder when that's at what age you were when. Do you remember how,
oh, absolutely.
How early?
Four, five.
Jeez, yeah.
I mean, one of the things, you know, if I have a regret, one of the things I wanted to do. So as we were putting the movie together, I was pursuing all of these leads from my childhood of people that my father knew.
Yeah.
And he had mentioned a lot of names in these videotapes. So I was going to try to track down, you know, a prison guard that he had mentioned or where I had visited my dad, you know, in upstate New York.
Where upstate was your dad?
He was all over. He was in Clinton Correctional Facility, which is in Dannemora, New York.
Dannemora.
So that's where Ben,
Ben Stiller's shooting.
And they got to shoot.
Escape from Dannemora.
And they got to shoot in the prison because he's Ben Stiller and they have big budgets. And
right.
I just had to hire a photographer on Craigslist to just do some exteriors on it.
Right.
Which was funny too, because they got yelled at by the, you know, one of my photographers got yelled at by the prison guards while they were shooting outside of one of the prisons. So if you're going to try to do that stuff low pro, just be, you know, real careful about it.
Right.
So I was trying to pursue a lot of different leads. And one of the stories in the movie is about me and my mom going to visit him. And my mom smuggling up some drugs, and I ended up using some old stock footage instead, but I had originally wanted to go back up there and see if, you know, the original place was still there where I visited him, and it just got to be very, you know, cost prohibitive. So,
right.
All right. So, yeah.
Were you aware as a young boy that this was unusual, that this was?
Yes. I would talk to my dad on the phone a lot. And I remember specifically when my mom told me that, like, you're talking to him in prison.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I was like maybe, like I said, 4, 5, 6.
Right.
And there, you know, you don't have any concept of what it means.
No.
So I'm just like, I'm just talking to my dad. So I never really thought anything of it. And when we would go visit him, I remember sitting, you know, and talking with him. I remember having a tuna salad sandwich from, you know, a vending machine. But I don't remember, like, you know, the buzz of the door opening or, you know, being patted down or anything like that. So,
yeah. Well, that's good. So you were reintroduced. How old were you in 97?
22.
22. Very young man. Just graduating college.
Yes, I had just graduated
In fact, you're...
Like right around that time, yeah.
In fact, I mean, part of your motivation and why you were looking forward to being connect with your dad was because you were proud of this accomplishment. Nobody in your family maybe had that. I don't know.
I was the first one on that side of the family. Actually, I think I was the first one on both my mom and dad's side of the family to graduate from college.
Right.
So that's not true. My mom's brother, who's my other uncle on that side, he went to college.
Is that the third brother or is that?
That's my mom's brother.
You said that. Okay.
So, he went to college, and then so I'm like the second one. But
I
on the Charnock side, on my dad's side, I was the first person to go.
But were they from Brooklyn or the Bronx?
In the Bronx.
Right.
I think you live in Brooklyn, but I take offense to that.
I actually live in Queens.
Oh, okay.
As it turns out. I did. I've been oscillating between those boroughs
I lived in Queens for a year after college too, so I
grew up there.
Queens, but I get people always be like, "You're from Brooklyn." I'm like, "No, I'm not."
Yeah. Well, they share certain. I mean, they share a certain ethnic.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
Things,
but we're
common.
Very protective of our borough.
Right. I'm just trying to keep on track because you see, you visit him in '97. Mm-hmm. You were reconnected with him. How long had it been? Before that,
prior to that,
till you really had a connection with your dad.
I mean, he was sending me postcards from prison.
Okay,
you know,
had he been?
Years.
Was he released?
He
because
was,
he got sick.
He had AIDS already
in prison.
In prison, and they had transferred him to the Cardinal Cook Medical Center on Fifth Avenue in New York. I think it's still there. I mean, it was there 6 years ago when we shot there, right across the street from Central Park.
Yeah,
and they had kind of transferred him there as like a kind of hospice.
Right.
So, you know, they let him finish out his sentence, or they were going to let him finish out his sentence.
That's merciful.
You know, in the hospital, and he got to leave for a couple of hours a day to make these interviews with my uncle and all
that.
But he eventually, even though he was sick and, you know, on death's door, he eventually went AWOL.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. And
this is before you met him?
Or? This was after.
Okay.
After I met him and all, you know, showed him my diploma on tape and all that.
Right. And still in 97 or 98. Well, he died in?
He died in December of 97.
Oh, not 97.
And we made these tapes in May of 97.
All right. So sometime over that summer.
Yeah.
And where did he die ultimately?
Specifically, I don't even know.
You don't even know.
On the streets. So yeah, he had went AWOL from the hospital.
Yeah.
Started getting into crack of all things because it's the mid to late 90s, so that's the hot drug on the streets. And I think he knew that the end was near, and he didn't want to wait to get there. Mm-hmm. I almost look at it, you know.
Yeah, makes sense.
Kind of that, suicide-y a
right.
little bit.
Well, the whole thing is a slow suicide.
Exactly.
Right, isn't
and
it?
He had, you know, I had gotten to see him. He had gotten to see me, and we kind of reconnected a little bit, and I think that's really all he wanted.
Right.
So after that, I think he was just like,
yeah, he's very emotional when he saw you. Right?
Yeah.
He got very emotional, right?
Yeah, it had been a few years, and I had shown him my diploma, and I think, yeah, that's really all he had left to accomplish.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of, let it go from there.
Right. He must have felt good that you
I hope
were
so.
Successful.
I hope so.
You know, his...
Yeah,
I'm sure.
And I had had these tapes. I had known about the tapes, you know, because I had, you know, been filmed by my uncle at the time, and I always, you know, it kind of brings it to a bigger, more universal thing. Like, I always wanted people to know his story. You know, even though I had seen him, and I say it in the movie, I can count on both hands mm-hmm. the number of times I saw him when he was alive.
Yeah.
And I just wanted people to know his story because it's so common. It's so common.
Yeah.
You know, more common than I think people even really know. Like I said, it doesn't mean that, you know, for, you know, people who are addicted, it doesn't mean you're going into the park and buying heroin.
Yeah.
It could be any number of things, but it's so common. And I really wanted to just share that story and have something left behind. You know, I didn't want his life and his death to be in vain.
Right.
You know, so
right.
it kind of compelled me to do.
Yeah. It might bring some level. I could see that this would bring, especially the way you made it. It has a lot of compassion and humanity in there. And your uncle is quite a
My uncle's a character too.
Great
so.
Character, yeah. we'll talk about him in a minute, but we're talking with Jason Charnick, who's the director of a documentary called Getting Over. What does Getting Over mean, by the way?
Getting Over means a couple of different things. Getting Over...
Your dad uses the expression.
Yeah, my father in the tapes uses the term Getting Over. It's I don't even want to say it's a street term. I mean, a lot of addicts on the street use it when they're, you know, pulling something over on someone, a con, mm-hmm, a short con, right. or just something, you know, some way to get money to buy drugs. Oh, I need money for groceries. And then you take the money that a friend gives you to buy groceries and you go and buy drugs. Oh,
right.
I got over on that guy.
Right.
And so my father had specifically spoken about he was trying to get over on people his entire life just to get money to buy drugs or get drugs, you know, directly. And so he talks about getting over on other people. And then obviously, you know, me getting over, you know, the pain of him being gone and not having him in my life. So it's got a couple of different meanings. And usually when I make pictures, I mean, this is my first feature and I've made some shorts before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm awful at titles. But when I was watching the tapes, I mean, it was just like the most perfect
right.
title.
It just clicked and made sense.
Yeah.
Well, now that you brought up also your own pain, how much of this was kind of helpful in that way, doing this? Was there a catharsis?
Because
I know it's part of a good catharsis, like you said, could be...
Filmmaking is therapy, you know, I call it filmmaking is therapy.
But also knowing that you might be helping
right.
people, and on top of that,
exactly.
helping people with your dad as a potential, you know, catalyst for that.
Yeah,
what a wonderful thing to do.
If his life can do something
good. That could take
good.
Away some of the pain.
Yeah.
Or and help manage it.
And a lot of people, you know, when we were on the festival circuit last year, we had a lot of people come out,
I'm sure.
When we do the Q&As, a lot of people were just like, I saw the description of the movie and the catalog, and I have a brother or I have a cousin that has a problem, and I don't know how to help them.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to see how somebody else did it.
Yeah.
And how somebody else, you know, dealt with the pain of having a loved one who's battling addiction. And those were the type of questions that just floored me, because I was like, that's why I did this, is to try to, you know, pay it forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So if people can see that and get a better grip on their lives and their families' lives and how they can help their families, I mean, even if one person
sure.
saved, it's totally, that's a cliche, but like, it's totally worth it.
Of course.
It's totally worth it.
Of course. Yeah. So you made the film at about, finished it, like, I'm guessing 2017 or something?
Yeah, we finished it. I finished it. October of 2017.
20 years after that.
Yeah, and we had
core
started,
footage was shot.
Yeah, all the original old school footage was shot in 97, and then we had our Kickstarter in 2012, and then we had the Indiegogo in 2015 for some finishing funds. We finished it in late 2017, sent it out to the festivals, and then, yeah, we made our premiere at South by Southwest in March of 2018.
And you said you had a friends and family screening.
Yes.
Was that in New York?
That was in Long Beach, California.
Oh, it was. So did your family fly out for that?
My uncle did. Arnie. My uncle was in town because my uncle's daughter, whose name is Sky, she's featured off screen in the movie. Mm-hmm. She lives out here in Los Angeles with her husband and two kids. So my uncle, the character that he is, he gallivants across the world when he's not living in New York. Mm-hmm. And he was just out visiting. So we scheduled it around the fact that we knew he would be in town.
Okay.
So it was him and my cousins were there.
Okay.
So, what did
Uncle Arnie think of the film?
From what he's told me, he loves it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's pleased with it, but he's also taken a real step back from it.
So he's kind of
letting me get
the spotlight.
Yeah.
But is he going to be at the screening on the 21st?
No, he's in Thailand for the winter.
Oh, I see.
And then he's got a rent-controlled apartment in the East Village, so he'll sublet it and take that money. He'll sublet it for like 6 months to like an NYU professor and then go live.
$30,000.
Yeah, exactly. Totally off the grid somewhere.
Yeah.
For a few months during the winter time and then come back and stay in New York.
Totally makes sense.
But yeah, he'll be in Thailand for the screening.
Got it.
But he's seen it a million times and he doesn't like the limelight. He really doesn't.
Do you have anybody at the other, are you just doing the Q&A?
Yeah, it was just gonna be me. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome to come and moderate if you want to.
Sure. Sure. I'd be happy to if I'm, as long as I don't have something else I'm forgetting.
Yeah, I was thinking of asking you, but I wanted to wait until we met first.
Oh, no. Happy to do it. I was going to say, because you could, I mean, it opens itself up. I mean, for one, screening maybe doesn't make sense, but it opens itself to bring somebody from the recovery or from some sort of, or maybe somebody who's just managed to turn things around.
Sure.
Who has gone through that.
And that's one of the things we're going to pursue afterwards, too. Is,
or from incarceration. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, in a way, you know, your dad, who is a lifelong criminal, I mean, again, all to support a habit. I mean, but, you know, it seems like they made some, it's such a flawed system, but letting him out, having that compassion.
Yeah.
Compassionately, whatever you want to call it, so he could live like the last months of his life or a year.
Yeah, not in, behind bars.
Yeah. I mean, that's not you usually just get such bad news from the, you know, anyway. It seems as though, because of the nature of where independent documentaries are right now, and it's very, very, very difficult to get distribution, to get exhibition, all that stuff. So you made the decision to, do you have a deal to put it on?
We have distribution. Distribution with Gravitas Ventures.
Right. Okay.
They bought it after South by Southwest. But we kept our theatrical rights because they had no intent on doing a theatrical release.
That's right.
So we just said, can we keep those rights? And they were like, yeah, go ahead. So we're doing.
Yeah, that's not going to cut in. They don't. I mean, you're going to get relatively, you know, in the scheme of things, a much smaller.
Yeah.
Many fewer people, in other words, will see it theatrically.
Exactly.
Than would see it, you know, on let's say,
It's
Amazon.
On Amazon and iTunes. And all
and
of
it's
that.
Currently on there.
Yes.
Okay. So. Yes. If you're in New York or in the New York metropolitan area,
if you live in New Jersey and want to, you know,
that's
cruise
the New York
on up.
Metropolitan
area. Yeah, the greater tri-state area.
That's right. Come on down and check it out. We'll be there. I believe I put it in my calendar. I don't think it's usually just so I can promote.
Sure.
And you know, remember when it is. Yeah. No, what's that sound there? Yeah, I have like a meeting at 6. Which will be over by 7, and then I can shoot in, and you know, I may not be there at the beginning, but I could do the Q&A.
Yeah, because I'm going to do like a little intro, and we'll watch the picture, and then we can talk about it afterwards.
Right. Hold on to my being there, just until you need it,
of course.
And then of course that will bring the masses.
Right, right, right.
I'm just kidding.
Pack the house.
Wait, we now have to move it into larger rooms. No. Yes, I'll be happy to do it. Sure.
That's awesome. Thank you.
My pleasure. Anyway, this is the name of the, again, the film is called Getting Over, and it's the story of Jason's dad, Ray Charnock. And it's a very personal story. And if you don't live in the New York City area, you can't make this screening, but come to the screening and meet Jason. But if you're not able to, and if you don't live nearby, then it is available to see on Amazon.
Yeah, it's on iTunes. It's on Amazon. It's on DVD and Blu-ray at all online retailers. Not in the stores, but online retailers. Well,
yeah.
It's also on probably whatever your cable system is, DirecTV.
Oh, right.
You know, that's one of the good things about Ravitas. I mean, we can certainly go into that if you want to talk about the distribution, because I have some hot takes about it. But they've been great in that we're on just about every platform except for Netflix and Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only because Amazon has subscription video on demand, SVOD exclusive. Because South by Southwest or Amazon last year at South by Southwest and Sundance had a program called the Film Festival Stars program. Which they discontinued. They had it for about 3 years.
What is it?
Basically,
I mean, I guess it's not.
It was a standing offer. We were not in competition at South by. We were in the documentary spotlight category.
Oh.
And just by, I don't think it's a secret.
So you can't win an award, in other words.
No, we wouldn't. Yeah, we wouldn't be able to win an award or anything. But just by virtue of being in that category, Amazon had a standing offer of $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 years of exclusive SVOD rights.
Oh, you can't turn that up.
So
they know that.
Yeah, and so
what are they hoping to benefit from that? I mean, obviously they ended it, so maybe they weren't benefiting like they thought they would.
It's weird, and there was a lot of talk about it too. You know, they get content for their service because they're obviously in competition with Netflix and Hulu.
Yeah, so I guess they're hoping just to get like some quality stuff that will be theirs.
Exactly, and if you were in competition, I think the offer was like $100,000. And for small filmmakers like us, you know, the budget of the picture was,
you made a lot of your money back.
You know, I mean, we still lost some money, but it's okay.
Okay,
but we got the exposure.
But what about now that that's over, that deal? Or is it?
Is the
program is over? How does that work?
We took advantage of it last year.
Okay.
And what ended up happening was Gravitas gave us a little more money than that. And then they, with the rights of the picture, took advantage of that program. So
they got the money.
But they shared it with
you in some manner.
Exactly.
And then here's the next question, which, I don't know. Since you have theatrical, you kept theatrical. Does that include educational, institutional theatrical?
No, they still had, and that was one of the things that we.
That's where the money's at.
I had handled the negotiations with them directly myself, for a little bit, and then you know when we got really close, I had to bring on, you know, because I'm not a lawyer, I had to bring on, you know, an entertainment lawyer, and we brought on Donaldson and Califf, who was like one of the more, they're probably the most famous indie, you know, film, you know, law firms in LA and probably the country. And they handled the rest of the negotiations just to get us to the dotted line. We had specifically asked for the educational rights.
Yeah.
But they were like, no, we're going to take advantage of that. So they wanted to hold on to that. So I was like, no problem. And it's on Canopy. So, I mean, I think that's one of the avenues.
That's the library.
The library streaming service.
Right.
That I'm a member of myself.
Me too.
A lot of fantastic movies on there. The entire Frederick Wiseman collection is on there.
A lot of Criterion.
Criterion movies. So they took advantage of educational stuff that way. So the only rights we really still have are the theatrical rights and international.
And how long do they keep, Gravitas keeps the education?
10 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
10 years. Yeah. It was originally, they said 15.
Are they doing those screenings, and do you profit at all from that?
They get to recoup the money that they paid us. So,
and then after that?
Maybe in like 8 years, we'll see 30 cents. So I got that to look forward to.
Yeah.
And you know what? And to talk about all this, like my next picture, I definitely am going to pursue self-distribution because it's hard. Hustling is hard. And I didn't plan for it the first time around.
Yeah.
But now that it's becoming so much more democratized, and I've seen other pictures be successful doing it.
Right.
You know, I'd rather hold on to the rights myself, and then anything that comes in comes to us.
Yeah, especially if you're on a topic that involves both addiction and incarceration, seems like it's such a you would have a lot of institutional opportunity, like
right.
you know, educational and institutional and I'm gonna opportunity. Pursue some, so you know, if you like, do another film on the subject, which now you're like an expert on it, so you it would make sense maybe to do another. Although maybe emotionally, you may want to change of pace. I don't know.
Right. Well, yeah, I am working on something else that's going to be another personal documentary that's going to okay. be pretty heavy too.
Oh, so. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. You good? That's a cliffhanger.
yeah, if I heard yeah. It's going to be. It's probably a few years away, but it's going to be a heavy one too.
Great. Well,
filmmaking is therapy. I've learned a whole lot. I mean, I've been in the studio system for 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been a post supervisor and an editor, you know, in the biz.
Right.
You know, for a couple of decades now.
Yeah. You worked at Technicolor?
I worked at Technicolor a long time ago.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Right.
The past few years I was working for a company that does like cross-branded promos and mm-hmm. you know, motion picture, you know, little promos and stuff like that.
Right.
So I kind of knew about how the business worked.
Well, this is a different business.
But this is a whole different business.
It's a different structure to it.
Yeah.
And so it really those rules for the studio totally structure different. Don't apply yeah. to this world.
Yeah. And I love it. I love the indie scene so much.
Sure. I understand there's a real strong community. And it's supportive.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you don't.
Oh my God.
I don't think you get that by and large in the studio.
Everyone's been generalizing. So, but I mean, I've connected with so many filmmakers,
so
famous.
Price is admission right there,
and
right?
Unfamous.
For you. Yeah.
And just to be able to pick people's brains, hear other people's experiences.
As we're winding down, who's like, did you meet any, who's maybe a hero? Did you meet somebody?
Oh,
Steve James?
A couple of
Frederick
people.
Wiseman,
I wish you. Oh, boy, I wish. No, but another great filmmaker that I met in Austin was Jeremy Workman.
Oh,
and
he's
his picture.
A close friend.
Sure. Yeah, the World Before Your Feet.
Yeah, he's a regular on the show. But
yeah,
maybe you know
that. I had heard he was on with you a few weeks ago. I listened to that
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
So I connected with him. He was the first person I met in Austin. We were online to pick up our badges together. And we were just chatting, and I went to see his picture and was just floored. And then he came to see my picture, and he loved it too. And his movie premiered in L.A. about a month and a half ago, so
right.
I came out for that, and
nice.
I'm
going
to see him when I go to New York. So he's one of the guys I met.
Well, we'll make sure that – we'll have to make sure he would have been a good Q&A guy too.
Yeah, he's actually he booked a screening in Westchester
oh,
for
okay.
that same night, so he said he can't make the screening, but okay. I'm sure I'm going to see him when I'm in town anyway.
All right, that's good.
So.
Well, Ashonda on Jason on Jeremy Workman. That's all I can say.
Yeah,
but you know his dad.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because they did the
Wells
show
movie and all that stuff.
That's right. Well, his biggest one was actually he has two. One on the Beats. I forget what it's called. But then he did also one on Andrew Warhol called Superstar, which kind of got the most a lot of
right.
Attention.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
You
one
should
yet.
See those.
My
yeah.
list of movies to watch gets longer.
Yeah,
every passing day. Like there's
yeah.
another like oh I need to watch that. I need
yeah.
to watch that. And just I'm. Just digesting it all right
I
now.
I bet. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. This has been terrific.
It's been great. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
In addition to seeing him in the hospital, my uncle recorded almost 18 hours worth of footage with my dad, telling his story of life as a drug addict on the streets of New York City.
Getting over, though, that's the key term, right?
Yeah, even though I never pictured it as getting over on my brother, I got over on him. But it was not a good feeling. The getting over did not work.
After watching all of the footage, I knew I had to return home to New York to learn more. I spoke with my uncle for the first time in years, and he led me on a journey that took me across the country.
Ray Charnock, or Whitey, they know him as Whitey.
Learning more about my dad than I ever knew.
He was a junkie and a thief, con man, all of that for 30 years.
And lo and behold, somehow or other got out there that he had AIDS.
Questioning my own feelings about him.
I always thought that it was a choice. I never saw it as a disease.
And drug addiction in general.
Addiction is so powerful that it affects choice invariably in the worst possible ways.
Living up there in one of those apartments, no escape, no nothing. So I understand it. I feel sorry that's the life that was given to him.
It's not that we don't want to change, and it's not that we don't know how to change, it's just that we can't.
Thank you, everybody. Coming up on the podcast, we have a lot of great shows in the pipeline. as I mentioned, Kalikala, while you can listen to that conversation. And also our last one, back in December 2014, I met Kalik for the first time. We did a podcast interview regarding his first feature, which was called Field Niggas, which really got a lot of attention and led to his new film, Black Mother. So both of those interviews or conversations are on the YouTube channel. We'll have a Kalikala on the podcast as well. We'll also be having an old friend of the podcast, Joel Petrikis, with his new film. It's called Relaxer. He's joined by actors Josh Burge, who he has collaborated with a number of times in his films, and the actor and comedian Andre Hyland. As I mentioned, we'll be having a series of conversations with author and film historian Joseph McBride, as well as the Canadian filmmaker Leon Marr and actor, you know, this is like a treat, Stuart Margolin, who has been around for many decades in television and movies, will be on the show. If you were a fan of Love American Style and the Rockford Files, you'll know who I'm talking about. We also have an episode with returning for his third visit, the actor and also theater owner, and Paul Lazar is back for, again, his third visit. And back for his second visit, we have actor Robert Longstreet. And also we have filmmaker Sam Green on, all coming up in the next few weeks, as well as coverage of South by Southwest 2019. God bless. Listen, take care of yourselves, everybody, and the ones you love.
Broken lines, broken strings, broken threads, broken springs, broken idols.